A62. Number 13B.
Yes. When we have done this blending, as here in B4, we must realize that we define here a term like substance only within the system of reference of the seven synonymous terms, which is the seven synonymous term, as we know, is only one category of the divine system of reference. The second category, usually we take the four sides of the city: Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. The textbook itself is built not according to the seven, but according to the four, the 4x4. So the structure of the textbook is really the four sides of the city. It isn't the synonymous term, or we would have seven chapters, or perhaps 14 chapters, or something like that. Whereas the textbook is written in the four, therefore, when we investigate through the chapters, say the idea of substance, the findings we will get are different from what we have been doing right now. Because then we get the further definition, the definition through the four. And even later one could conceive of defining substance through the levels. Because on each level then the idea of substance would appear in a different form. So we must be aware of the restriction of what we are doing right now. And this is legitimate, that one restricts oneself to one category, because that's the scientific method of teaching any subject, that one isolates, so to say, first a category and just thinks within one category without taking in consideration that there are other categories which intertwine. Yeah? So that is clear. That we are not surprised that the findings would be different. All right, we go to the next synonymous term, soul. What would you like to take in soul? Something very fundamental. Again, identity, all right. It's a big thing, identity. Say, the great question is always, do we find our identity? What is our identity? Who are we? What is our ego, our true ego? What is the true I? What is our identity? And therefore, I think it's a good thing to think out what identity implies, how we could define identity. If you start out first with the intra-reflections, what could you see as identity in soul? First of all, it would be incorporeal. This identity would be, yes? Again, unchanging. So it is incorporeal, therefore does not live in the body, is therefore unchangeable, will ever be untouched by anything, therefore untouched by the body. Whatever happens to the body does not happen to our identity. Whatever happens to our body, if we lose a leg or if we lose a finger or we lose anything of the body, that does not change in the least the identity of our true being. So we have the unchangeability of identity, untouched, incorporeal, what else?
Sinless
identity. Yes? Yeah. All right. Then we go to mind and say, now, what is this identity from the point of view of mind? It is what? It is of the nature of idea. Huh? Yes? That identity consists of the nature of idea. Yeah. It's interesting, you know, you will see that when you do these exercises with all kinds of terms, always when you go back to first mind, the first thing that springs up in your consciousness is that it has to do with idea. Huh? That seems to stick out so much, huh? That it is here, that identity is an identity of ideas, yes? Therefore, that identity can only be identified through ideas, huh? Yes? Further about mind, that the identity...
An emanation of mind. The identity is an emanation of mind.
Is an emanation of mind, yes? Uh-huh. What does it mean that it is an emanation of mind? What does that in practice mean?
That everything that constituted that identity would have its source, its origin in mind, it would be coming forth from mind.
Absolutely.
All the characteristics of yeah. mind.
So it would be, it would be conceived of mind, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's it. You see that you say, from where does this identity come from? Who has conceived of it? What is it that conceived this identity? And then you see it is in mind, and in mind's infinite knowledge, and in its mind infinite perception, in its mind infinite conception. Huh? There is, in that parent mind, is the origin of our identity. Yeah? So our identity is conceived of mind. Huh? See now, funny now, see I have done something which I shouldn't have done. I have now defined it through a synonymous term, huh? Because as you go on, it becomes very difficult to define it through ideas, because the synonymous term is so much bigger. Huh? Yeah. So we get that. Huh? That. What else could you see? Well, that's quite good. Huh, in mind. What about spirit? Again, make a sentence with identity. Huh? Our identity is spiritual. That's a big point. So conceived by mind as idea, that identity in spirit is spiritual, yeah, is therefore pure, as an absolutely pure identity. What does it mean, a pure identity?
Unadulterated.
Unadulterated. How could it be adulterated? Yes. So it's absolutely spiritual, unadulterated by fleshliness, by materiality, by mentality. Huh? That's the greatest adulteration, mental adulteration. Yes. Further about spirit, that identity that is of the nature of ideas in mind is in spirit, spiritual, pure, unadulterated. It's real. It's of divine nature, huh? Of spiritual nature, yes? It's the only identity. Huh? We have no dualistic identity. We are not shy of schizophrenic, huh? Whatever that funny term is in English. Schizophrenic. Yeah. All right.
On one term, when are we absolutely identified?
In the
terms, would you not say at the point of soul that there is an absolute identity of spiritually, absolute spiritual identity, or do we have to wait for principle for that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know if we have to wait, because in the spiritual, naturally, they are all at the same time. It's only in our reasoning that, in order that we don't leave out anything, we go along the word order. We would not need to go along the word order, really, huh? But it's a very good process of building up things, yes. So your question is, when is identity absolute in principle? Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So at the point we are still at the spirit, huh? Because it seems that soul spirit is a very necessary combination, an important combination for practical purposes, that our identity is a spiritual identity, therefore a pure identity. What else did we have? A real identity, the only real identity, the only identity, and therefore the only real identity. We don't have next to it another identity.
Which is invulnerable.
Invulnerable identity. Is invulnerable an idea of what?
Soul.
Very good. Very good. Yes, of soul. No. Soul of spirit. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sentence, please.
The identity is the reflection of spirit.
The identity is a reflection of spirit. Yes. Uh-huh. Sure.
Huh? No.
Yes. Is it defining identity?
Defining it as reflection.
As a reflection, yes. Now I see, yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay, it's spiritual, huh? Then it's a reflection of spirit when you say it's spiritual, huh? Yes. What else do you see in spirit?
The offspring. Spirit.
It's the offspring of spirit. We have the same thing, yeah? Uh-huh. Okay. Is that spiritual identity substantial or not? Yes, huh? Well, it's not flimsy, therefore it's not highfalutin. Huh? That spiritual identity for most people is just up on cloud nine, nowhere else. It's a hallucination. It's not real, huh? Whereas for us, it's absolutely substantial. You can stand on, you can really rely on, huh? On that identity, that we know we have a spiritual, substantial identity. Yeah. We go on to principle.
This identity has no personal ego.
Wonderful, huh? That identity has no personal ego. I wish I could demonstrate that 100%. Yeah, it's so true, huh? Wonderful. There's no personal ego further in principle, Esther. Our identity is absolute, huh? Here it comes, huh?
What has confused me is that in soul there's a certainty and surety.
Certainty of soul, yeah.
Steady and stable. That's why I've connected absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, but if you go to the textbook, you will see that she says always principle is absolute, huh? Yeah, because, yeah, okay, with principle further, our identity, I think you touch on the most, that it is not a personal ego, yeah, identity as, No, let's not go so fast over principle. Let's see a bit more about principle, huh? Our identity as principle, yes?
Always harmonious.
It's always harmonious, uh-huh. Yes? Yeah?
It's the structure. I was like
wonderful. Oh, good, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. We should have a television so that we could have seen how you do it, huh? See, our identity is structure, you know. It's all this, huh? That's it, huh? Good. Thank you. It's quite good to see that our identity is not just a concept, just, how should I say, an amorphous concept, you know, but that it is actually a terrific interrelationship of ideas working together in a gestalt form, huh, and giving us the structure of manhood in Christ. Huh? That's the principle, the impersonal sense of our identity. Yes?
Relationship.
Please, a sentence.
Identity as of principle is related with all other synonyms.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. You want to bring out that our identity is not just a personal ego or identity, but that it is constituted of relationships of all ideas with all other ideas, that structure is actually our identity, yes? Our spiritual principled ego, yes? With life, our identity with life. Here we have it, huh? We have a wonderful, indestructible, eternal identity, huh? Therefore, do we ever die? No, huh? The identity of man never dies, huh? Only the personal sense of our identity can die, and hopefully dies. Yeah?
Identity is self-sustained.
Our identity is self-sustained. Now we come to that life sense, huh? That it is self-sustained, self-provided, hmm? But we don't have to make it be, huh? That it is out of itself, yeah? That we don't, yeah? Okay. That identity has in life, now we got it again, huh? Has individuality. The true identity in life is infinite individuality. There you see now the differentiation between identity and individuality. Yeah. So that identity is not just a number one unit identity, but an infinite identity, therefore has infinite individuality of identity. Yeah.
That identity of soul is being and is our being.
Good. Huh? That identity is not just a term somewhere or a concept somewhere. Huh? That it is being. Huh? It's a living identity. It's a beingness identity. It's an isness identity. Yes? Very good. How is it with truth?
Our identity is whole and has the Christ truth and divine consciousness.
Good.
Whole.
Our identity, identity is always whole, yeah, and it has a Christ consciousness. Huh? What does that mean when identity has a Christ consciousness?
It has a saving consciousness.
Has a saving consciousness. Huh? It saves us from what? Identity saves us from what?
From sin, death,
perfect, bringing in reality. Yes, it saves us from having a false identity, huh? Like a corporeal identity, yes, like a personal identity, huh? Like a distorted identity, huh? Like a vague identity, like a changeable identity. Huh? You can go right through all the various false sense of identities, huh? So that we see it in truth, you see, that we see that because our identity is the identity of the wholeness of truth, huh, it has no erroneous identity within itself. Therefore, it wipes out everything that is erroneous about our identity. Hmm? Yes? Good, huh? Okay, what else could we see in truth? The identity in truth, that consciousness, the saving consciousness, Christ consciousness in truth.
How is the ideal form?
Wonderful, huh? That the identity is never less than ideal, huh? Never less than ideal. It's naturally nice to know that if we are sticking to the seven synonymous terms in consciousness, that our identity will always bring out the highest ideal of identity, our highest identity of man. Yeah. Whatever that is, we do not know what it is individually, but we know that it brings out the whole man as our identity. Yes?
I would have a sense of dominion.
Also, huh? Yeah. And it would be nice if you would make a sentence in which identity would appear. I'm very hot on that, you know, because you know why I'm so schoolmasterly? Is that the right term?
Huh? Yeah.
Schoolmasterly, huh? You know, annoyingly schoolmasterly. But I know what happens, you know, you go home and you are at home 50 weeks. And in those 50 weeks you make those exercises. And if you are not disciplining yourself into the dominant tone and the combining tone, you will be at sea in the next day. Thought will just wander around. You just will combine ideas at random. And you don't know anymore where you are. Only when you stick to the main tone, huh, of what you define, of what you want to define, you have somehow a guiding line not to deviate too much. I say too much. Huh? Actually, you should not deviate at all. Huh? So, this is the purpose why I ask you to make a sentence, because then I hear if you still are thinking about the dominant tone. You know what I mean with dominant tone?
Yes.
The question under consideration, yes. Therefore, when you are at home, you know, it's wonderful, you sit back, you know, you don't need notes for that, you don't need a book for that, you just can sit back, you know, those wonderful long evening nights, huh? Winter nights, and you just sit there. And if you keep the pedal note, the dominant tone, you say, what is identity? Because you are interested to know what you are. Huh? You are interested to know what you are. What kind of an are-ness you are. Huh? What kind of a being-ness you are. And so, in order that thought doesn't wander off in the next minute to anything else, you should somehow have a musical sense, a tonality sense within you where something very strongly just says, identity, identity, identity. And then you flow through it, identity as soul. Huh? Flow through it, identity as soul. Oh yes, that unchangeable identity, that untouchable identity, that identity which that you go to mind, which is conceived of mind, which is mind's own idea of itself. That's conceived by mind, its origin is mind, therefore conceived by mind, therefore known by mind, I am known by God. Therefore, as spirit, you begin to hear that identity is ever-evolving, that it is substantial because you can rely on it, it's your divine nature, and that identity consists of only spiritual qualities. And you go on to principle and you see that identity, you bring up identity constantly, that identity is impersonal, it is absolute, it cannot be changed, it is absolute sense, it's even imperative for you, it will be brought out imperatively in my life. And you go to life and you see that identity is eternal, therefore deathless, that it therefore existed before Abraham was and will go on existing for time immemorial. It's because it's indestructible, because that identity is self-renewing, is self-perpetuating, self-conserving, self-providing itself, and therefore you go to truth and you see that identity is of the nature of truth, therefore of the nature of freeing me from a false sense of identity, from all wrong concepts of identity. You keep the tone of identity, you see, in your consciousness. So you come to love, and what do you see in love? That identity in love. Huh? That identity in love is always Yeah. Perfect is always at the point of perfection, huh? Has never left perfection. Therefore, there was never an imperfect identity. We never had an imperfect identity. That identity is always self-fulfilling itself. What else do you have in love? That identity is complete, yeah? What else do you have? Is always self-fulfilling itself at the point of perfection, yes? It's always mothered by love, huh? Always cared for by love, huh? It's therefore never in danger, it's never unprotected. That identity is always embosomed by love, embraced by love, yes? Huh? It's always one with love, yeah? Do you hear how you can just take one idea, but stay with that idea? And when you speak or when you think, even when you think in sentences, not in words. Think in sentences at the beginning. Or you wander off. You wander off. Then you are right back where you ever always were, at the atomistic sense of your understanding. Yes, that's that. Okay, yeah.